Film 4 International, British Screen and Windmill Lane Productions present A Limelight Production, Hear My Song, starring Ned Beatty, Adrian Dunbar, Shirley Ann Field, Tara Fitzgerald, William Hootkins, James Nesbitt, Harold Behrens, with David McCullum as Jim Abbott. Casting, Jane Frisby. Music, John Altman. Associate producer, David Brown. Costume designer, Lindy Hemming. Production designer, Caroline Hanania. Director of photography, Sue Gibson. Editor, Martin Walsh. Executive producers, Simon Fields, Russ Russell, John Paul Chappell. Screenplay by Peter Chelsom and Adrian Dunbar. Original story, Peter Chelsom. Producer, Alison Owen. Director, Peter Chelsom.
In black and white, a boy aged 6 sits on a bench in a hospital corridor.
Are you Mickey?
Yes.
You're to come with me.
The elderly nurse takes the boy by the hand and leads him down the corridor. She ushers him into a room where a blonde woman in her early 30s is lying in a bed. Mickey looks at her, his lips slightly parted.
Don't die gasping for breath, son. Mickey, promise me that.
The woman strokes her son's face. She looks at the kindly nurse and then back to Mickey.
The child has nothing for the journey but his wits.
Her eyes widen. Her head falls back on the pillow. The eyes stay open. She dies. Mickey's nose starts bleeding. The nurse moves around the bed towards the boy. She tilts his head back and swabs his nose.
Are we going on holiday?
Now Mickey, in his dark blazer, shirt and tie, and above the knee-length shorts, talks to the camera.
All of us had a difficult childhood, but I think I got away with it.
The present. A robust man with a pencil moustache and in a sailor suit looks embarrassed.
I'm sorry, Mickey. Mickey, I'm really sorry. I'm sorry. I really am sorry. It just came on me like that. Just like that. You know, I've never let you down in the past, Mickey.
Shut up, Ronnie. Shut up. Sorry, Mickey. You know, the doctor said, don't whisper. Don't speak. Never mind sing. We've got it, Mickey.
We've got it.
Shut up. If this happens again, Mickey, we're going to have to go back to the docks.
Mickey O'Neill, concert promoter, stares at Ronnie, cups his chin in his hand, bites his fifth finger and shakes his head. Now in a taxi, Nancy, wearing dangling diamante earrings, her hair in a topknot, is putting on red lipstick with a purple gloved hand. She smiles to herself. Above her in the distance, the Liverpool night skyline. A neon sign for Hartley's. The A of Hartley's has been replaced by a crossed heart. Formerly Hartley's Music Hall, it's now a club. Nancy's taxi pulls up outside. She's greeted by two burly men. Derek, the shorter and balder of the two, pays the cab. Gordon opens the cab door.
Nancy
acknowledges their admiring looks with a beaming smile and walks up the steps of the nightclub, passing a poster which says in large black letters, Ronnie Lavelle sings songs from South Pacific, 14th and 15th of October. Next to the caption, a cartoon sketch of Ronnie, the man who's lost his voice. Nancy, who's wearing a sleeveless indigo-coloured sequin dress, stops at two or three tables to greet people. The club is packed. On the stage, in front of a backdrop of palm trees, a three-man jazz band. Derek leads Nancy gently by the hand towards the bar. Gordon and Derek are both smiling genially. Nancy's mouth opens in happy surprise when she sees the magnum of champagne waiting for her. Gordon opens the bottle. Outside, another view of the city at night. A train, its windows lit, slithers silently across the screen. Upstairs in his office, Mickey is standing pensively by the window, his face pink and purple from the neon light outside. He goes over to his desk. Derek and Gordon enter hurriedly, smiling broadly. Mickey lights a cigarette.
Nancy here.
Yeah.
Champagne?
Yeah.
In Mickey's hand, a dark blue ring box. He stares at the ring, snaps the box shut and throws it to Gordon.
Give that to her halfway through the second verse.
What? Derek and Gordon look mystified.
I'm going on.
Derek and Gordon look across to Ronnie Lavelle and his mother and back to Mickey. Their faces beam. Downstairs, Gordon, adjusting his cuffs, approaches the stage microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention, please? Please, please, may I have your attention? Please, thank you. Can I have some quiet, please? Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, the fire brigade have just phoned to tell us that Ronnie Lavelle is being cut out of his Ford Capri in the worst car crash in the history of the M6 motorway. Thank you. But, at very short notice, we are proud to present the man who put the heart back into Hartley's, Mr. Mickey O'Neill!
Nancy at the bar looks up in surprise as Mickey hurries on stage. She smiles expectantly.
We didn't pay to see you, O'Neill.
Mickey shrugs. Ronnie watches from the wings.
If I don't see her each day, I miss
Nancy
her.
Nancy smiles in embarrassment.
And gee, what a thrill. Each time I kiss her. Believe me, I've got a case.
You're rubbish, O'Neill. Get off.
Of Nancy with the laughing face. She takes the winter and makes it summer. I'll tell you. Summer could take some lessons from her. Picture a tomboy in lace. That's Nancy with the laughing face.
Nancy gives
Have
a very broad
ever
grin.
Have you heard mission bells ringing? Well, she gives you that very same.
Mickey signals with his finger. Out of the crowd, Derek walks, head held high, towards Nancy with the ring box on a tray. Nancy blushes but smiles delightedly. She peeps into the box, shuts it fast, hardly daring to look. She opens it again, takes out the ring and starts to put it on her finger. A drunk man next to her is watching. He touches her arm, her nose. She turns to him, still smiling, touches his nose with her finger and pushes the man down on the floor. Derek and Gordon pick him up and drag him away. Nancy looks back at Mickey on stage. Mickey leaps off the stage and runs across to Nancy. She takes his head in her hands and they kiss. Now in bed.
Make love to me, Mickey. Make love to me. Mickey, I love you. Mickey. I love you!
Vice versa, love! Vice versa!
I don't believe it!
What?
Vice versa! What?
Vice
versa! What is it, vice versa?
What?
Vice versa!
What's wrong?
You haven't really made love to me yet, have you?
Damn it, we were there!
Mickey!
What?
No, I mean Emma!
What?
Jesus, you just can't say it, can
Nancy?
You?
Nancy! No! Munchkin! Plum plum! Bollocks!
Vice versa.
In his office.
They've got to be universal, they've got to be popular, and they've got to be live.
Mr. Everybody.
Not universal.
Coffee and cream.
Not popular.
Frank Sinatra.
What?
Derek holds up a photo of a man in a Sinatra trilby. Gordon.
Frank Sinatra.
No. F-R-E-N-C-C-I-N-A-T-R-A.
Show me.
Mickey snatches the photo. Derek and Gordon giggle.
Does it work?
For
frozen death out, Mickey.
Mickey grins.
Yeah. Bollocks. Poke up.
Now Mickey hurries down the street. Derek and Gordon struggle to keep up with the pace of the younger, slimmer man. They turn a corner. Mickey points to a wall covered in posters. Derek holds up a poster. Gordon, wearing a trilby a size too small, applies the paste. They hang up the poster, while Mickey talks to passers-by. A uniformed policeman sends them away, but it's too late. The poster of a Frank with a C, Sinatra with a C, is already up. Back at the club, the man himself.
Yeah.
Eat me up and then you'll taste what's on the menu. Lick your lips, some sweet delights we have here for you tonight. Where does it hurt you, baby?
In my ear.
Well, okay, Oscar, hit it. You're a delightful dish.
The audience, mainly female and middle-aged, is looking bored. Some shake their heads at the perspiring trilby performer on stage.
Glide with me, take a ride with me, sky high with me.
Mickey, puffing on a cigarette, is observing their reactions from the door. He goes upstairs. On the landing, Derek and Gordon.
Right, sorry, Mickey.
Tell them I'm on the golf course with Tony Bennett.
They're in the office.
Bollocks. Have you found anybody?
Joseph Locke. He's big. He's Irish.
He's a bigger draw than the Pope.
Boys, I didn't go and see the Pope. What is he?
He sings.
Women weep.
The Ryan's weeping? This I've got to see.
Waiting in Mickey's office, a group of middle-aged and elderly ladies.
Cup of tea. Sherry. Take a seat.
Four of the women sit down on the chaise longue. Six remain standing. A young boy sits cross-legged on the floor. Kitty Ryan speaks.
The Ryan family has owned this building for 50 years. We needed a two-thirds majority to get you dismissed. We got three-thirds. You're out.
Three-thirds? It's a lot, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It wasn't difficult. Misuse of funds, not paying our 7.5% commission.
No management responsibilities?
No income to see.
I'm 30. I was born in peacetime. I haven't been where you've been. I haven't seen what you've seen. I didn't have much of a family. And when I came here to Britain, I thought, well, you know, maybe I could make this Irish community my family. And you know, to a certain extent, I think I have.
Mickey walks round to the front of his desk. Derek and Gordon are by his side.
There are givers. And there are takers. There are those who find a kind of giving in their taking. That's me. If ever I've taken, and I can't consciously say that I ever have, I've found a kind of giving in my taking.
Bollocks.
Bollocks. Bollocks. You're a bollocks.
Who have you booked for next week? Bing Crosby with a K?
No. Joseph Locke.
Get away.
We've got him for 1 week.
I don't believe you. Joe Locke's a wanted man. Tax or fraud or something. He'd be arrested if ever he returns to England.
We know.
You know?
We know it's Joe. Yous all know it's Joe. But we don't bill him as Joe.
Then what do we bill him as? Ricky fucking Robert?
No. Mr. X. Is it or isn't it? We're not allowed even to mention Joe Locke. How it is these days?
Well, you can't get more popular than Joe Bleeding Locke.
So do I stay open, or do you lose Joseph Locke? 7.5% of that would do nicely.
The women look at one another. Outside in the street, a transistor radio and a pair of brown suede brogues up a ladder. The shoes belong to Derek, who's putting up a poster of a silhouetted figure in a Spanish sombrero and black cape. Derek whistles to the camera and climbs down the ladder. Gordon watches him, hands in pockets, his trilby upturned on the pavement. The men start to sway in time with the music. Derek places his arm on Gordon's shoulder, and together they wobble an impromptu soft shoe shuffle dance routine. A woman walks past and throws a coin into the upturned hat. The men do a double take and laugh. Now a taxi in a rainy street. Inside, an attractive woman in her mid-40s and Nancy.
Wait here.
The woman puts a newspaper on her head, jumps out of the cab and runs into a doorway. She shakes out the paper and goes inside. Mickey, carrying a goldfish bowl, runs along the street and jumps into the cab.
You see these two goldfish? Apparently they have an attention span of only 3 seconds, so that means that every time they go around the bowl and they meet again, it's as if they've never met, and they can start again.
Is this you saying you're sorry?
What I'm saying is you could say that goldfish don't know what missing is, but Nancy... I don't think that's true.
Mickey hands the bowl to Nancy. The cab door opens. The attractive woman jumps back into the cab with a smart carrier bag.
I hear you can sing.
Who are you?
I'm Kathleen Doyle, Nancy's mother. Are these because she's a Pisces?
What?
The two fish.
Mickey gives a nervous laugh. Nancy grins at him.
Absolutely.
Derek and Gordon are hanging up another poster of Mr. X, Is It or Isn't It? In Mickey's office, silhouetted against the window, the back view of a portly figure in broad-brimmed hat and cape. Mickey comes in.
What country, friend, is this? Caught between great icebergs of doubt, nipped upon the frozen floods of philosophic despair, let nodding tempests of verbosity whistle round your butters. Michael, row the boat ashore for this peripatetic fugitive.
Will a grand a week do?
To know yourself, you've got to keep up with yourself. But yourself moves on, and is not today what it was yesterday, and you've got to run to keep up with it.
12:50.
Running after a figment of ourselves.
1300.
Ah, clever Odysseus, who outwitted the Cyclop.
Cash?
Up front. We go up at 8. And for fuck's sake, Joe, don't talk to nobody.
Mickey leaves Mr. X sitting in his chair, a fat-faced, jowly man with a dark moustache. In his hand, a dragon-topped cane. He smiles to himself as the camera circles round him. As if by magic, a white dove emerges from his hand. The dove hovers on his fingers.
Serendipity.
On the stairs outside the office.
Hey, see one at interview. They're outside.
He's not the full shilling, is he?
Norman Vaughan's outside with about 40 other people. Norman Vaughan!
The lift doesn't reach the top floor.
I said I was your personal assistant. They said come on with him.
Yeah, sure enough. No sweat. Is he going to stay the distance?
He's a pro, Mickey. He's a pro.
Does he run this operation, this yes, Mickey O'Neill? I remember this when it was a musical. Mickey, no. Baby, you're looking great. Listen, this is what we're going to do. Yep. I'm going to talk to you about booking someone as controversial as Joe.
Fine.
So we're going to have to do this straight away, okay?
Okay.
This is television, Mickey. Okay, well, this is television, Mickey, baby. Okay, well, I'm going to twitch your lips, Nancy. Now... how many of you out there remember the famous Irish tenor Joseph Locke? This was the question put to 100 Merseysiders on hearing the news that Joe Locke was topping the bill at Hartley's tonight. 20 said they thought he was dead. 30 said they were sure he was serving a life sentence. 13 thought he was a tax exile in Ireland. And 35 said, Joe who? All this, however, is overshadowed by one exceptional statistic. So let's ask local impresario and boss of Hartley's, Mickey O'Neill, why it's a sellout. Mickey.
Well, Norman, I suppose it's because he's the epitome of live popular universal entertainment, and he's a great guy.
Yeah, but what's he like? You've met him. What's he really like?
Well, he's very poetic, very unto himself.
But isn't there a risk involved, booking a wanted man?
Well, it's a risk I'm prepared to take, Norman. These people deserve it.
And Nancy, what a pretty girl. You come here. I believe you have a story of your own, is that right?
Oh, my mum will kill me for this. Anyway, in 1958...
58.
My mum won Miss Dairy Goodness, and Joe Locke was the judge.
Joe Locke.
And she's coming to see him tonight for the first time in 25 years.
First time in 25 years.
That's the story.
What's your mother's name, love?
Kathleen Doyle.
Kathleen Doyle. So Kathleen Doyle was Miss Dairy Goodness in 1958.
Mr. X, smiling to himself, watches from the upstairs window. Now a flashback to 1958. A line of bathing beauties.
And to conclude this most memorable event, one last look at these ravishing beauties.
The girls parade up and down, each with a number in her hand. Smiling bystanders look on. At the trophy table, dark-haired and well-built Joe Locke with a number of lady admirers.
One last look. While our judge reaches his decision. And what more fitting way than to ask Joe? We will never forget this. None of us. Ever.
The debonair announcer in white shirt, cravat and blazer watches Joe admiringly. Joe snaps his silver cigarette case shut, sips a glass of water and walks among the beauty contestants. Picks up the crown and sash.
Joe's taking his time. Hard decision. Joe's gone for Kathleen. He likes her. He likes her. Well done, Kathleen. £1,000 to Miss Dairy Goodness. That's enough, Joe. We won't tell a soul. We won't tell a soul.
Won't tell a soul about Joe taking a long time to adjust the sash around Kathleen's neck. Now an old home movie of Joe, Kathleen, two women in household overalls, and two men all smiling, posing for a photograph. Kathleen, Joe, and his black and white Dalmatian drive off in Joe's white Austin Healey. The others wave them off. A pile of newspapers for sale. The Daily Mail headline, Joe escapes unfair taxes, beauty queen arrested. On the right, photos of Joe and Kathleen. Now on a jetty, uniformed policemen carrying truncheons run past Joe's parked car. The Dalmatian is in the passenger seat. Kathleen is being handcuffed behind her back. The Dalmatian is led away. Three men in overcoats and Joe hurry down the jetty steps, looking behind them. Joe, carrying a briefcase, jumps into a boat. Another man casts off. The police are close behind on the jetty steps. The officer in charge looks about him as the boat pulls away. He yells out and leaps from the jetty onto the boat. He grapples with Joe, who pushes him down. The officer stumbles to his feet and tries to grapple with Joe again. This time, he falls headlong into the water. He surfaces, thrashing about. Joe picks up a life belt and throws it to the gasping man. As the policeman catches the life belt, he watches Joe's boat sailing swiftly out of the harbour. The policeman slaps the water in frustration. Joe stands tall on the prow of the boat and salutes his enemy. Another newspaper headline, Beauty Queen disqualified, she aided Joe's escape. A photograph of Kathleen mixes to Kathleen as she is now watching the TV report with Nancy.
Last word for the viewers. There's going to be fireworks tonight, believe you me.
Believe you him. And always remember, folks, do unto others, but do it quick. This has been Norman Vaughan for City Scene outside Harfleet.
You can't keep it shut, can you?
But everybody knows.
Turn, please.
A dressmaker is pinning Kathleen's black dress.
Once again, please.
How do I look?
You look fatal. How do you feel? Turn, please.
I feel sick.
The doors of Harkley's. A placard reads, House Full. People are crowding inside. Derek and Gordon are selling Don't Lock Joe Up t-shirts.
Thank you, sir. Don't lock Joe up.
A slim man with his broad-brimmed hat pulled down over his face walks up to Derek.
Could I see Mr. O'Neill, please?
And your name, sir?
Jim Abbott. Chief Constable.
The genial smile disappears from Derek's face. Upstairs, Mickey is reading. Door opens.
The Chief Constable to see you, Mickey.
Mickey smiles nervously as the po-faced Jim Abbott in raincoat and hat strides into the room.
You can't do it, Chief. The big guy's so popular here. I've extended the run. You can't do it to these people. We put everything into this.
Yeah, I can see that.
Look. Just give me to the end of the run and then... Stick the bastard away for as long as you like.
I'd like a house seat, Mr. O'Neill.
Mickey hurriedly makes out a ticket for the Chief Constable.
And now you can take me to his dressing room.
They walk along the backstage corridor. Outside the dressing room door, Jim Abbott hesitates for a moment at the sound of a razor. He frowns to himself and pushes open the door. In front of the mirror, Mr. X is shaving his hairline. He notices the policeman and smiles amiably, holding up his arms in a welcome gesture. Jim Abbott looks at him, then shuts the door again.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill.
Everything okay?
The man is a fake.
What? You mean I'm paying $3,000 a week for a fake?
I don't think you need to worry, Mr. O'Neill. I'm the only person here tonight to know the difference.
Abbott starts to walk away.
But Chief, if it's not Joe Locke, and you know that, why are you staying to see the show?
A sad, thoughtful look from Jim Abbott.
Curiosity.
Mickey stands gaping, his arms held captive in the air as if holding an invisible beach ball in front of him. Mr. X is reading a copy of the stage.
We go up in 15. Good luck.
Mr. X gives Mickey an assured smile. Mickey returns the smile and whispers. Back in the club.
Compliments, Mickey, ladies. Enjoy yourselves.
The tables are packed. Nancy is sipping champagne. Mickey in evening dress.
Everyone all right?
Thanks for the champagne.
No problem. How are the Ryans then?
You did well to get them, Mickey.
Gordon, bring the ladies another bottle of champagne.
Get away!
Kathleen sits down at the table.
Nice crowd tonight, Mickey.
Yeah, well, he's the real thing, isn't he?
I'll be the judge of that.
A trickle of blood from Mickey's nose.
Is it me?
What?
Your nose is bleeding.
Mickey wipes away the blood with his handkerchief.
See you later.
The women watch him as he hurries away, smiling knowingly to each other. Mickey introduces Jim Abbott to the man sitting next to him.
You met the chief of police, Jim Abbott, Barry Hayden.
Barry, beaming, extends his hand. Po-faced Abbott takes it, then looks away immediately. Behind the silver stage curtain, Mr. X unscrews the top of his cane and takes a swig.
How's it going, mate? Everything all right?
A touch comes when the white mind sleeps, and only then.
Yeah, right. Listen. You see that very tasty lady out there?
Mr. X's fleshy face peeps out from behind the curtain. He sees Kathleen.
You had an affair with her 25 years ago.
Mr. X peers through the curtain again.
I think I would have remembered that, Michael. She's a fine-looking filly.
Her name's Kathleen. Sing to her. You could be on a winner.
Mr. X's fat face widens even further.
Come to think of it.
He turns to Mickey, but Mickey is gone. He leers at the smiling Kathleen, who's unaware of his gaze. Now Mr. X is striding manfully towards the stage microphone. Mickey and Nancy are watching expectantly.
Across the ocean wild and wide, to where
Kathleen's face fills the screen as she listens to the song. Mr. X is looking only at her.
You are my bunny bride.
Tears begin to well up in her eyes. Nancy watches her mother thoughtfully. Somebody hands Kathleen a handkerchief from behind. She dabs her eyes. Mickey's on the move again, looking round at the audience's rapt attention. Jim Abbott is also watching Mr. X with a resentful look. In a back room, Derek and Gordon are counting the takings.
Happy hour?
Still can't any advance, Mickey.
This is the night's takings here. Oh. It's only the beginning, fellas. Only the beginning.
In the backstage corridor, Kathleen stops to light a cigarette. A hand offers her a lighter. It's Jim Abbott. On his face, the faintest hint of a smile.
Look at me. I think I was 18. Thanks.
Has someone upset you, love?
No. You enjoying it?
Oh. I'm enjoying the whole thing. Is not quite what he was, though.
How many of us are?
Well, you. What's funny?
How is it you can lock something away for 25 years? Almost make yourself believe it doesn't exist. Then some heel sings a song and you love him. And you can't imagine a world without men. That's funny.
We'll make a bonfire.
Carlo, it's Mickey. Table for two, my account in the name of Mr. X. Yep, Mr. X. Yeah, it went great, great. I'll get you two for Thursday. Buy you one later. Oh, and Carlo, put them by the aquarium. Ciao.
Mickey empties a bottle of champagne over a formation of champagne glasses. Gordon hoists him up on his shoulders. But Barry Hayden, for one, is not so delighted.
Must be the luck of the Irishman.
Bollocks.
I think you'll find this a very square-shouldered little wine cap.
I married him on the rebound. It was just after you left, and I was in pieces. For a while, I thought he was tearing up your letters. But there weren't any, were there?
I had to be persona non grata, Kathy. Did I leave anything behind? Nancy.
Oh, no. Nancy's not yours.
And your husband?
He died 7 years ago.
Cast a cold eye on life, on death. Horseman, pass by.
Horseman, pass by. He was a sweet man. To the day he died, he called me Miss Dairy Goodness.
Why was that then?
A momentary flicker of surprise from Kathleen is forgotten with the start of the Mexican music. She smiles delightedly as the trio stands by their table. Mr. X pours more wine. Cracks a lobster claw and hooks it round his nostrils. He smiles playfully. Kathleen smiles at him. They clink glasses. In a bar, people are dancing. Derek and Gordon are nimbly turning their partners around the floor. The Ryan ladies are drinking punch.
Him or what?
You just take it for one who knows love. You close your eyes and you cast your mind back 30 years and you see and hear what you want to see and hear.
Mickey and Nancy are dancing to the rhythm of the female violinist. Upstairs, Mr. X is carrying a bottle and two glasses. He opens his door. A few feet behind him, Kathleen follows a little unsteadily. She removes her high heels and goes inside.
Are this lot having a good time or aren't they? Will they have sore heads in the morning or won't they?
Do I love you or don't I?
You're better. What about your man, Mr. X?
What?
Well, is it or isn't it? Are they or aren't they? Will they or won't they? Look, is she going to worry tomorrow? Was it or wasn't it? The thing is, she's having a good time and it's all down to us. I mean, stick with me and you'll be farting through silk.
Kathleen, her hair disheveled, her dress torn, appears at the door of the bar. She looks dazed. She looks around her. People have stopped dancing. They stare at her.
I don't know who the fuck that man is up there. But I know who you are, O'Neill. And I know what you are. I should never have done this. Nancy! Get your coat. We're going home.
Nancy looks up at Mickey wide-eyed, her lips parted. She puts Kathleen's coat around her shoulders and gently ushers her out. Kitty Ryan stalks up to Mickey. She clenches her fist. Mickey lands heavily on the floor. Derek and Gordon open the doors of the club. Upstairs, a white-faced, gaunt man.
To ask you again, you have no other sets of keys to the premises. And you have no other personal assets or monies that you've not already declared within this document. I'm sorry, I need a yes or a no.
No.
Mickey's wearing an eye patch. The bailiff and two policemen stand in the middle of what was once Mickey's office, now stripped bare of all furniture. Nancy gazes sadly at her two goldfish. The doors of Hartley's are being boarded up. A boy throws a rotten egg at the poster of Mr. X and runs away. Mickey, with a blue holdall over his right shoulder, stands in front of the doors. Derek and Gordon come up to him. Derek grasps Mickey's shoulder affectionately.
Your heart is.
Thanks for showing up, fellas.
What are we going to do, Mickey?
You're going to house sit this place for a couple of weeks.
Why? What are you going to do?
I'm going home.
Derek and Gordon look at each other. Mickey strides across the road, scowling as the cars pass in front of him. He curses, his teeth gritted. As he walks, he has an idea. The stop barrier comes down across a road bridge. He hurries to the side of the bridge, climbs up the railings and down the other side. Now he's holding on with only one arm and his legs are swinging free. He looks below him and throws himself off the bridge, landing on some netting on the deck of a ship as it passes below. The ship is sailing out of Liverpool Harbour. Mickey leans over the ship's railings, looking back towards the port. He lowers his head. The ship clears a wide berth of the orange-red lighthouse. For a moment, darkness. Now it's early morning. The ship is docked at the port of Dublin. Mickey, in a lifeboat on deck, sits bolt upright. A sailor bids him good morning.
Morning.
Mickey throws off the tarpaulin that had served as his blanket, leaps to his feet and dashes off down the gangplank and onto the shore. He stops at a refreshment stall.
Give us one of those sandwiches there. Eh? Yeah, thanks. Great.
Sandwich in hand, he finds a taxi.
The strip.
The taxi stops outside a grey brick building. On one of the upstairs windows a sign, Fintan O'Donnell, theatrical agent. Mickey runs inside. In an office, a middle-aged secretary wearing glasses is pounding a typewriter. A young man about Mickey's age with dark hair and moustache is pinning a map of Ireland on the wall. Mickey walks in smiling.
You know, when I first met him, he hadn't two pins to rub together.
Molly, this specimen used to be Mickey O'Neill. We very rarely see him out in daylight.
I need £5 for the carriage, Finn.
Molly, petty cash, please.
Molly reaches for her petty cash box.
What's with the map?
What the map shows, Mr. O'Neill, is that each artist is represented by a pinhead.
She hands Mickey the money. O'Donnell shakes his head with a little smile. Mickey and O'Donnell run outside.
I haven't got them. Thanks very much. Thank you.
O'Donnell pays for the taxi.
Where do I come in?
Look, have I asked you for anything yet?
No, but it's coming.
I'm here to find Joe Locke.
Jesus Christ, O'Neill, you're a madman.
Father.
The man went AWOL 25 years ago. No one's heard tell of him since. How do you know he's not dead?
God spare him.
I know he's here, Fenton. He's more than just a booking to me. Make some calls, will you?
Fenton O'Donnell shakes his head with the same amused disbelief.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, then.
I have another one for Killarney.
Thanks, Noel. Yeah, they're fine. Yeah, Sheila's fine too. Thanks. Well, Noel says he thinks he saw Joe Locke at a cattle auction in Tullamore about 18 months ago. So that's 6 for Arklow, 5 for Killarney, 4 for Tralee, and 1 for Tullamore.
Right. We go to Tullamore?
Not me, Mickey. No way.
Fenton O'Donnell at the wheel of his car, next to him Mickey studying a map. Fenton is frowning as if to say, what am I doing here? Mickey spreads the map out, obscuring his friend's vision. They're speeding along a country road flanked by greenery. Mickey starts to sing. Fenton starts to smile.
Moving, my buddy and me, we're moving. The freeway before us, eating it up, the sun in our eyes.
We're moving,
yeah.
From Mobile to Maine, yeah, we're grooving. All glistening chrome, high fidelity. If you mess with me, you mess with my buddy. And if you knew my buddy, I'm telling your buddy, you'd never mess with me. Yeah.
The Morris traveller passes a lake and a white stone cottage. Dark clouds indicate that a storm is on its way. At a multiple crossroads they stop. Now they're sitting back to back on the roof of the Morris under an umbrella.
How could we miss the tower at Dunagore?
There's only one explanation. Take her jacket off.
What?
Just do as I tell you. Take her jacket off, turn it inside out, and put it back on again.
You're wired to the moon, O'Donnell. What's that in need of?
The fairies.
Fenton jumps down from the car roof.
They get you lost on purpose.
The fairies?
They are bastards.
Now they're back on the road, their hair flattened by the rain, their jackets on inside out, expressions grim. Mickey sees something ahead of them and tugs Fenton by the shoulder. A village with a tall square tower. Fenton accelerates the car, spewing out white fumes from his exhaust. A frog on a stone watches them pass in the pink early evening light. Now they're putting up a tent.
Are you sleeping? Just fix the ground sheet, will you? You take sugar?
Aye. Three.
Three? You're as thin as a stick. How come?
Worry.
They settle down into their sleeping bags.
Do you ever see any of the rest of them?
Now and again. I see Kieran a wee bit. He's married. He's got 7 children. We all heard you were doing really well. There was even some rumour about you going steady. Of course, I didn't believe any of that.
Aye, I blew it. Mrs. Keegan was right. There's a bit of a want in me. I don't know what it is, though.
Ah, well. She was right about all of us. Switch that torch off.
Outside the tent, the lights of Fenton's car are still on. The battery's running flat. The lights go out. It's morning. Mickey crawls out of the tent. He looks around him at the beauty of the landscape. Soft green hills, misty in the early morning light. He raises his eye patch to get a better view. He smiles in delight, despite his black eye. Behind him, Fenton, in a tweed fishing hat, is busy cooking fish over a fire.
This is the place.
Ah, it's great, isn't it?
No, this is the place we're looking for.
All right, God bless the little people.
God bless them.
Right, are we down and get us some water for a drop of tea? The well's empty, there's a stream in the woods. Here.
Fenton throws Mickey a plastic container. Mickey chuckles. He makes his way down a stony hill. At the bottom, he lies on his stomach to dip the container into the water of the stream. As he looks up, he sees an Irish wolfhound on a rock a few feet away, watching him with interest. The dog turns towards the voice and moves away.
Come on! That's it!
Through the bushes, Mickey sees a portly man, like Mr. X, but not Mr. X, in an overcoat and flat cap, greeting his dog.
Is it or isn't it?
The man looks over to Mickey as he gets into his car.
Yeah.
Mickey drops the water container into the stream as the car pulls away. He dashes up the hill, leaping over fallen branches.
Get her going!
What?
He's in that car! Let's go!
Where's my container? What about the trout? Jesus!
Fintan stamps out the fire, grabs his jacket and rushes towards the car. In the other car, a Citroen, the portly stranger and his dog speed away. Fintan turns on the engine. It won't start. Now they're push-starting the car down a hill as the black Citroen races past the bottom of the hill. As they pass the white stone cottage again, Mickey and Fintan are catching up.
Have you got the photograph?
Under the seat.
Is this it?
That's the best I could do.
At a junction, the man turns left. Mickey and Fintan slow down behind an old man on a bicycle, and they drive on in the wrong direction. They realize their mistake, turn around, and take up the chase again.
Jesus, you're a terrible driver.
You should see me when I'm on my own.
I'd hate to be with you when you're on your own.
They pull up outside a whitewashed cottage with a grey slate roof. The Citroen is already there, and the wolfhound is waiting by the door. A tractor passes by as Mickey and Fintan go into the unlit pub.
The man in the black car, where'd he go?
Sure, I'm not legally open yet, lads.
All right, we'll wait.
Fintan and Mickey sit themselves down at a table and take out their smokes. An old man wielding a glass smiles at them. They smile back. Another man, his head bound in a scarf, stumbles into the pub. Bangs his head repeatedly on a wooden pillar.
Oh, will someone, for the love and honor of God, get me to a dentist quick? For this tooth has me driven to distraction.
Will you hold your wish, John James? Have the wife asleep above?
That's a hell with your wife. I'll give two yow lambs and a hank of bacon to the man who can rid me of this...
A trap door opens and the mystery man and friends appear.
Can a man not have a quiet game of poker?
John James needs a lift to the dentist.
Does he now?
Come here, John. Let's have a look.
Oh, it's a big job, John James.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
Brendan here used to be a vet. Now, if a man can take the tooth out of a fiery stallion, he could do the same for yourself. Sure, we're all God's creatures.
Are you sure he's a vet now?
He's a great vet, but a terrible poker player.
Go to the car and get the tools of the trade.
We'll need 10 cloves and a bottle of whiskey. Come on, right, let's begin.
John James is laid out on the bar by his mates. A piece of twine is threaded through a hook in the ceiling and tied to the handle of the pub door. Fintan holding his pipe and Mickey with a cigarette watch in disbelief, their mouths open. The mystery man is pouring whiskey down the patient's throat, tot after tot. Brendan, the ex-vet, opens his bag of tools as the whiskey is now being poured straight from the bottle. It spills out of John James's mouth. One of the men puts the bottle on the end of the bar. The drunk, with a crazy grin, grabs the bottle and pours the contents down his throat. Wielding a gleaming surgical probe, Brendan tries to identify the rotten tooth. Brendan inserts the piece of twine into the patient's mouth. Unseen, the drunk returns the empty bottle to the bar.
I can't fight. I can't go through it.
Give him another drink of that whiskey there.
Everyone turns to see the drunk falling backwards, catching the twine attached to the door handle in the floor. The tooth is out. Mickey rushes over to the bar.
That was great, fellas. That was great. I'd like to buy us all a drink. What are you having, Joe?
Joseph Locke, for it is indeed he, looks at Mickey unsmiling.
I don't know about you boys, but I think I'll go back to the game.
The men disperse, leaving Mickey looking awkward. John James grins at him toothlessly. On a country road, Finton is in a phone box. Mickey waits dejectedly by the car. Over the brow of the hill, coming towards them, a black car. Mickey realizes who it is and rushes round the front of the Morris to wave him down. Joe's car speeds past without slowing down. Mickey runs across the road, grabs Finton by the hand and pulls him towards the car. The phone is left dangling with Finton's little daughter still on the line. A cattle auction. Joseph Locke, in flat cap and overcoat, shakes hands with a couple of men as he makes his way to the front of the spectator stand. Below the stand, a brown and white Frisian is paraded around the ring. This is an all-male assembly, some concentrating on a sale, others sharing a joke. Mickey enters and stands at the back of the stand. He looks around for his man. The auctioneer, in a white coat and broad-brimmed sandy-coloured hat, invites a new bid. Joe raises his hand. Mickey spots him in the crowd and smiles. Joe raises the bid. Mickey waves to him, grinning. Joe nods to raise the bid. Mickey waves again. The auctioneer takes the wave as a bid. Joe notices Mickey. He looks displeased. He raises his hand again. Mickey waves again, grinning inanely. Joe raises the bid again. Mickey waves again. Some of the men are beginning to see the joke. Mickey gestures as if to say, "Let's go outside and have a chat." Joe indicates no more bids with his hand. The auctioneer bangs his gavel and declares a sale. Mickey has bought the cow. The men around him congratulate him. Joe, his mouth taut, looks over to Mickey. Finton comes in. Now on a country road.
Thank Christ we're not vegetarians. We're in a shaggy dog story.
This is my ticket. I'm giving her to Joe.
It's not yours to give.
I told you I'd pay you back the 700 quid.
750.
In front of them, a grey stone farmhouse.
I need this guy. Let me call the shots.
Mickey leads the way to the house. Finton leads their cow. The black Citroen is parked in front of the house. A few feet away, a male peacock watches them. Mickey knocks on the blue door. A middle-aged woman opens it.
I don't know what yous have done to him now, but he was that angry he took himself upstairs for a lie down.
Well, you see, this gentleman is...
I don't want to hear about it. Give me the cow. I'll put it in the field. And take yourselves down to the wash house. There's a smell off the two of yous with Gagger Thrump.
Mickey and Finton in a bath in a stable. Behind them, a tethered white horse. By the bath, a gaggle of white geese. Later on, in the house.
May I just take this opportunity, sir, to thank you for receiving us in your splendid home and for clothing us. And you're probably wondering what all this is about. Well, I'm not going to beat about the bush. That's not me. That's right, isn't it, Finton?
May the road rise before you.
And may the wind be always at your back.
Good luck.
Now, Mr. Locke, I'm 30. I was born in peacetime.
I haven't been where you've been. I haven't seen what you've seen. You know, Mr. Locke, when I first heard you sing...
What song was that?
Kathleen, Make a Bonfire, it's got to be.
Was it live or recorded, Mickey?
Was it live or recorded?
The French.
French.
Four glass clock. How long has it been stopped?
It's an old thing of me father's. Hasn't moved in years.
Have you any methylated spirits in the house? I can't promise you anything, but I've got these ones moving in the past.
Yes, huh?
It's evening. Mickey is wearing a coat and Fintan is working on the clock.
You haven't a fucking clue what you're doing, have you?
Well, neither have you, you bollocks. I was born in peacetime. Jeez. At least I bought you some time. How's it going anyway?
He doesn't need the money, Fintan. That's it. That is it.
Well, how much did you offer him?
I offered him a lot of money. Still, he's taking me out for a drink, so you never know. Do you like the coat?
Aye, well, watch yourself. We're on his turf. Keep your eyes peeled.
What else can I do? I have to hang in there.
Mickey! You could do worse than telling the truth.
That'd be something, wouldn't it?
Mickey leaves Fintan sitting at a table, fiddling with the clock. The headlights of Joe's car are like fireflies against a dark, stormy sky.
Look, Joe. It's not hard to imagine the kind of publicity a comeback like yours would get. I mean, you haven't sung in 25 years. The women, Joe. The women. There wouldn't be a dry seat in the house. It'd be a celebration of your career.
No, Mickey, it would be a celebration of yours.
Look, Joe, there's a big audience out there waiting to see you. I know, I've seen them.
Joe stops the car and gets out.
What are you talking about?
I can't see them. Don't you want to see them?
Joe and Mickey's faces are illuminated by the car headlights. Joe pushes Mickey out of the way and walks over to a house. He looks through a lighted window at a group of young teenage girls dancing a hornpipe.
Do you see those girls, Mickey? Would you like to be responsible for their dreams?
Mickey looks at Joe, then back through the window at the girls in their white shirts, tartan skirts, black dancing pumps with crisscross laces on pure white socks. Their hair braided or tied back, dancing lightly on their toes, and quite unaware of the two men's gaze. Joe looks deeply into Mickey's face. A pointed rock rising out of the sea is dwarfed by an even higher rocky headland. On the top, the silhouette of an ancient watchtower and two tiny figures walking towards it.
Thought you were taking me for a drink.
Fuck me, what's this place?
Aye. Would you look at it?
Joe climbs up a ladder into the tower. Now a view of the night sea glistening silver in the moonlight.
What is this place?
This used to be the edge of the known world, Mickey. Now, the next parish is New York.
Mickey stares at the bare stone walls around him. Joe hands him a bottle.
Try a drop of that.
Mickey takes a swig and chokes as Joe climbs back down the ladder. Mickey puts the bottle on the floor. Now they're outside the tower and walking towards the edge of the cliff, hundreds of feet above a dark, swirling sea. Joe stands on the edge. Mickey hurries
Joe,
to join him.
You can be straight with me. I mean, I'm sure the thought of being arrested at your age must be frightening, but surely you haven't lost your edge for a fight. I mean, we've all got to face our demons, Joe.
Joe pushes Mickey down onto the ground, head and arms over the edge.
In the old days here, Mickey, the sailors never learned to swim.
even more respect for the sea.
Joe tightens his grip. Below, the menacing white waves.
No.
Three men appear from nowhere. They grab hold of Mickey.
Right. Now, who are you? What do you want? I want the truth.
My name's Mickey O'Neill. I'm a concert promoter.
Half of Mickey's body hangs over the edge.
Honest to God, boys! I'm not wearing me old clothes!
Joe is laughing now.
Well, lads, all I can say is you know you're getting older when the taxmen start getting younger.
Thank God they don't get any wiser, Joe, eh?
Taxman! I'm not the taxman, for Christ's sake, I'm not!
Then what are you after me for?
I want you to come back! I want you to do a gig!
Why are you doing it?
I'm doing it for the people!
Bullshit! He hasn't uttered a word of truth in the day and hour he arrived!
Well, what do you want me to say?
I want you to tell me what's in it for you! What do you want?
Come on!
The simple truth.
Mickey looks down at the dark waters below.
Nancy! I'm doing this for Nancy!
Who's Nancy?
My girlfriend! The girl I love! I'm doing this for her!
Joe motions to the men to pull Mickey up. They carry him away from the cliff edge and drop him down on the grass. He lies on his back, physically and emotionally exhausted. He swallows the night air, blinking up into the star-filled night sky. Slowly, a happy little smile appears on his face. Back at Joe's house, Joe's wolfhound watches Fintan, who has fallen asleep at the table. Clock parts are strewn near his sleeping head. On the headland, Mickey dashes up the ladder to the tower. Joe and the boys are drinking.
Sure, it can't be all that serious.
I booked you.
What do you mean you booked me?
I thought I was booking you, but I booked a fake and I didn't get away with it.
Bad, was he?
No, he was all right. In fact, he was so all right, he managed with my help, I might add, to seduce an old flame of yours.
Well, there's a few of those around.
Yeah, you're right there, sure.
Yeah, but Kathleen just happens to be Nancy's mother. She didn't like me in the first place. Now she hates me and I was just trying to cheer her up. So don't talk to me about serious! I've lost my money, my business, my friends, the girl I love. It's all because of some fucking tenor. Hasn't sung in 25 years and has the audacity to turn down $6,000 a week.
Kathleen.
Kathleen Doyle, she was Miss Derry Goodness in the 50s-something.
Mickey sits down dejectedly on the bed. Joe is lost in thought.
1958.
Joe's boys look at him.
Out of the mouths of babes.
Joe lumbers over to Mickey.
If you don't go back for her, Mickey.
I don't know.
Well, I know. And I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Joe sits down next to Mickey and hands him the bottle.
Not even a contemptible skitter like yourself.
Joe smiles almost affectionately.
How do we want to be remembered?
Joe crosses over to the glassless window and looks at the sea of moonlight and the dark promontory beyond. He turns to his mates.
What shape's the sea spray in?
She'll take you anywhere, Joe.
She's still at Ballycotton.
She's never left.
We'll sail at first light.
Mickey's mouth drops open in surprise. Joe's boys smile and nod approval. They clamber down the ladder of the tower, Mickey jumping up and down in excitement. Joe's car drives through the darkness back to his house.
I don't know what his real name is, Joe, but he calls himself Mr. X. But don't worry, I'll deal with him.
You know what? I'll deal with him. I'll have his bollocks in a jam jar.
All right, Joe, but trust me, I'll find him for you.
Joe grabs Mickey.
I trust you, Mickey. There's a well in the field out there. Nobody knows how deep it is. And if you're trying to pull a flanker on me like others have done in the past, you'll end up at the bottom of it. And one other thing, I think you'll be leaving me the cow.
No sweat, Joe. That was always the idea.
Joe grins, his hand still tugging at Mickey's coat lapels. Mickey grins back foolishly.
What time do we leave?
What time is it now?
Fintan wakes up and looks at the clock, then at Joe. Joe pats him on the back. Outside.
You see, this is what happens when you tell the truth, Mickey. What time do you leave?
6. How did you manage to fix that clock?
I don't know. How did you persuade him?
I don't know. Kathleen, Nancy's ma. Her and Joe were more of an item than I thought. No wonder she was pissed off. This is it.
What?
Joe's well. He says nobody knows how deep it is.
They pull off a corrugated iron cover and peer down the well.
Give us a coin.
Piss off!
All right, then I'll use my own.
Mickey throws a coin down the well.
Shh.
Aye, so it's deep. Come on.
No, bollocks. Let's get something else.
Why?
Because I want to see how deep it is.
Well, this is pointless. I'll see it at the tent. I'm wild.
Here it goes.
Mickey throws down a rock.
3, 4, 5, 6.
Fintan returns.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I hate things like this.
13, 14, 15, 16.
Jesus Christ, I can't stand it.
Yeah, you're right. Let's go back to the tent.
No. Here. Look, here. Give me a hand with this. Come on.
Oh, right.
Get it up. Oh, take that, you great big gaping hole!
They toss a wooden railway sleeper down, not noticing the chain attached to it.
Jesus Christ, it's the cow! Stop the chain!
Come on,
look, I'll
grab the chain.
You go back
and
pack
goodbye.
He's there,
yeah. What do you want me to do?
Go back that bloody cow!
Are you all right, though?
I'm going to have to bless this chain!
It's not working!
The cow is now only a few yards away from the well. Fintan is chasing her. Mickey picks up a rock. Above them, a white full moon. With only a few feet to go, Mickey hurls the rock at the chain. It breaks. Mickey and Fintan collapse on the ground, watched by the cow. From the well, a splash. Back at Joe's house, flat out on the kitchen table, Joe, fast asleep, his arm around his clock. Mickey and Fintan are collapsing their tent. Now, driving into the sunrise, Mickey, Fintan and Joe, who's wearing dark glasses, a little worse for wear. The sun rises from beyond the sea. Above it, a large black cloud masking some of the blue sky behind. Fintan drives the Morris into a small harbour port towards a blue and white boat moored alongside the jetty. It is the same boat that had carried Joe away to safety 25 years before. The Sea Spray. Joe and Mickey get out of the car.
Hi, Joe. The engine's humming like a bird, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Joe's boys help him aboard. He looks up at Fintan, watching on the jetty.
So clerks of your trade, are they?
No, I'm actually a theatrical agent.
Joe's face tightens as if to say, not him as well. He turns away. Fintan looks awkward for a moment. Mickey, in flat cap and coat, dashes past his friend, patting him on the chest, and jumps aboard. Joe shuts himself in the ship's cabin. The Sea Spray pulls away from the jetty. Fintan, in fishing hat and hands in pockets, walks along the jetty smiling.
When are you going to let me meet the wife and kids?
Mickey, you know you can meet them anytime.
Yeah, I know. Fintan, what have I ever done for you?
Nothing. But it doesn't matter.
Mickey raises his arms in a shrug.
See you later, alligator!
Fintan waves.
In a wild crocodile!
Mickey stands with both arms out to the side. And slowly he waves with his right arm above his head. Fintan on the jetty waves with his right arm, and then with both. The Sea Spray leaves the harbor. On deck, Mickey and Joe's boys turn their heads towards the sounds of Joe's clear tenor voice. Two of Joe's boys, who are more than middle-aged, in coats and trilbies, point to John James's case. He hesitates, then opens it. As the boat sails on, to his clear delight, Joe's voice is joined by the sound of the boys on guitar, accordion, and clarinet. Mickey and Joe are standing in the empty auditorium of Hartley's. A pigeon flutters down from an upstairs box.
It's up to you, Joe. What do you think?
Joe looks at the pigeons clustered on the plaster-strewn floor.
Ah, sure. This is grand.
He walks out of the auditorium. Mickey smiles. A large red crane outside Hartley's. Derek and Gordon are driving Joe's boys along in a transit van. Nobody's saying a word. In a dressing room, Joe opens his makeup box. Carefully, he unwraps a red velvet roll. Takes out an eyebrow pencil and begins to apply it to his moustache. He smiles to himself. Mickey turns on the lights of Hartley's bar. He looks up as five men, all senior citizens in bow ties, trilbies and black coats, wander in looking around them. They're carrying musical instruments. Mickey watches at a distance as they lay down their instruments. One of the men notices him and approaches him purposefully.
You were the stage manager, love. Pop over the road and get me 20 cigarettes. Keep the change.
Mickey can't believe the audacity. But he smiles.
Yeah, sure.
The blue transit van stops. Joe's boys leap out of the back and creep through the manicured bushes of a sizable garden. Across the lawn, a two-story luxury 1950s house, painted white. Mr. X, sitting on his red motor mower, wearing a Stetson and a pale yellow leisure suit, spots his intruders and drives out of the picture. Joe's boys run after him, overpower him, and drag him back to the van. On the first floor balcony of the house, Mr. X's wife and two daughters tearfully wave goodbye. As the van leaves, a whippet runs after it. In the van, Mr. X smiles at Brendan, whose arm is keeping him in his seat. Brendan smiles at him. On the front seat, sandwiched between Derek and Gordon, the whippet in a red dog coat. Now an old man in a trilby and overcoat shuffles through the door of Hartley's. The musicians are having a cup of tea. They look around at the old man.
Boys, you've got to start somewhere.
The musicians rush across the room to greet the old man. Mickey proffers the tea tray. The old man takes a cup. He has a sip and only then acknowledges Mickey.
Who are you?
I'm in charge. Who are you?
Danny Rose. Where's the dots?
What dots?
The music.
Haven't you got it?
Aye.
Benny fumbles in his inside pocket for his watch. He puts it to his ear.
Fucking watch. You got 1 hour.
Right.
Blimey, what a geezer. Come on, what are you
doing? A door bursts open.
It's all unnecessary, I'm telling you. Look, you see, I've reached a stage in my life now where basically I don't argue with people.
Mr. X and Joe sit facing each other. Between them, a swaying lamp casting shadows on the two men's faces. Mr. X recognizes Joe. His mouth drops open. Then he grins sheepishly. The transit van pulls up outside a music shop. Mickey rushes in.
Do you have any sheet music?
He jumps back into the van, not seeing the whippet on the front seat. Mickey rifles through the yellow pages, then does a double take as he notices the dog. Back to Joe and Mr. X.
A Jewish landlady came up to me in Blackpool and she hit me with her handbag. I said, what's that for? And she said, you know very well what it's for, and what are you doing back in the country? So you see, Joe, wherever I went, I wasn't allowed to be me. And sure, isn't that all any of us want to be, Joe? Individuals. Well, I've kept you boys long enough.
Why'd you do it?
It's the other side of the coin, Joe. I did it to keep your name alive.
You're an entertainer, aren't you?
I am.
You'd like to make people happy, wouldn't you?
I would.
Do you think you make Kathleen Doyle happy?
Mickey, with a whippet in his arms, runs into another building, climbs the stairs, and hurries past a receptionist to where Nancy is working.
You can't take that animal into a dentist's surgery.
It's not an animal. It's a whippet. Look, I'm in deep shit. I have to find the music for Joe Locke. I've been all over town. I can't find nothing. I want you to come with me. What do you say?
Nancy, in a surgical white coat, looks away.
How much?
What?
How much will you pay me?
Christ save me, this isn't about money.
Then what is it about, Mickey?
It's about Mickey O'Neill going to Ireland, nearly getting killed, and bringing back a singer to sing for nothing to a crowd of bastards who probably won't even appreciate it. I've got 35 minutes before the orchestra walks off. For the first time in my life, I haven't one single idea in my head, and all I can think about is you. Now you tell me what that means.
Nancy pulls the dentist's lamp towards her.
Just say it, Mickey.
I love you. And I want you to love me.
Nancy lets her head drop. She throws off her surgical gloves and turns to look Mickey squarely in the face. Joe and Mr. X.
I'm sorry about Kathleen, Joe. I really am.
All this bullshit aside, she told me her side of the story. She wanted me to be you so much. Look, any of you guys got a light?
One of Joe's boys lights Mr. X a cigarette. He inhales slowly and deeply.
In truth, Joe, I'm only to blame because you're to blame. No offense, Joe, but do you think you made Kathleen Doyle happy?
Joe's face is a mask of sadness. His eyes flicker nervously.
I didn't, did I? Do you know why I'm here?
I'm hoping it's to sing.
Might put you out of a job.
Mr. X shakes his head. Joe unbuttons his shirt, removes his cravat, and reveals a scarred chest.
When the surgeon went in here, he said I had a large heart. Maybe there's room in this world for two jewel locks.
Mr. X doesn't understand. Joe extends his hand to him. Mr. X puts a cigarette in his mouth and takes Joe's hand. Joe smiles as he buttons up his shirt. Now Nancy and Mickey are in the Dublin Music Library looking this way and that. As they run to the librarian's counter, Nancy removes Mickey's cap from his head.
You're in luck. His arrangements are registered. Have you completed the buff form? Yes, here you go. Yes, good. You can collect these in, 10 days?
Mickey covers his face with his hand. Nancy takes hold of his other hand and smiles sweetly at the middle-aged librarian.
We were born in peacetime.
Mickey looks up at Nancy and then at the mystified librarian.
We haven't been where you've been.
We haven't seen what you've seen.
The librarian smiles at them. They smile back and then smile at each other.
Thank you.
Bye. The librarian watches them go. They've made her day. On a bench, Joe and Kathleen.
What did he say to you? Did he tell you you were the most beautiful woman he'd ever met?
Yes. Is that what you're going to say?
Joe walks over to another bench and picks up the bouquet of flowers he had brought. He sits down.
No! I'm just here.
He puts down the flowers.
I'm just here to remind you that you are.
A little smile appears on Kathleen's face. It broadens into a grin. She stands up and reaches out her arms to Joe. They begin to dance to the music of Joe's boys, who just happen to be sitting a few feet away.
Sure, I'd rather be in jail than in love again.
At Hartley's, Mickey and Nancy rush in with the sheet music. Benny Rose examines it, his brow knitted in a frown. Mickey and Nancy watch apprehensively. Benny sighs.
Did I say get the originals?
No.
Then I'm a lucky man. Boys, you know the score. Let's keep it mono.
How are you?
If the phone doesn't ring, it's me.
For a second, his stern face breaks into a playful smile. A moment later, the frown is back.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Admission is free. The theater is filling up. I urge you to take your seats as we are about to close the doors. We are about to close the doors. Thank you.
Outside Hartley's, crowds of people have gathered. A cluster of cooks, a juggler juggling flaming torches, Derek embracing a slim woman. Inside, the seats are filling up. Benny Rose is giving his band last-minute instructions. Kathleen and Nancy and the Ryan ladies are in a box. Kathleen embraces her daughter. Mickey in the wings is talking to Joe, dressed in evening wear and adjusting his black tie. Mickey, looking more like a stagehand than an impresario in an open-neck check shirt, walks out onto the stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, at absolutely no expense, Hartley's presents Joseph Love.
He punches the air with his fist as he leaves the stage and pats Joe on the back and sends him on. Kathleen and the ladies are on their feet applauding. Joe stretches out his arms to acknowledge his audience.
Hear the music of the waters, loud of tender passion sighing, like thy heart to which go flying, all my thoughts in wakeful dream. See the lovely dewy garden, breathing orange perfume greeting, what can set my heart a-beating, like the fragrant of its bloom. Now I hear the thou must leave me, and I will soon be parted. Canst thou leave me broken hearted? Will thou never more return?
Joe pauses and smiles up at every corner of the old music hall. He waves his arm at the audience as if to say, that's enough now, but he's smiling broadly. Mickey watches from the wings like a small boy on his first visit to the theatre. Joe mops his brow with a white handkerchief. Benny Rose is smiling now. The Ryan ladies are clapping on their feet. Kathleen whispers to Nancy as another song begins. Inside the theatre, people young and old are listening to Joe through the loudspeaker.
They will light your heart.
Their Their reverie is interrupted by the arrival of two vans, scattering the crowd seated on the pavement. Uniformed policemen pour out of the van. Among them, in his raincoat, Chief Constable Jim Abbott, yelling out orders again. History repeating itself. For a moment he looks up at the loudspeaker, as if distracted by the sweet sound. He recovers and joins the officers, pushing his way through the jostling crowd. In the box, the ladies have noticed the commotion. Joe, handkerchief in extended hand, sees the line of police helmets bobbing up through the crowd towards the stage. His face betrays no emotion. Mickey is issuing instructions to Derek and Gordon. He stands waiting for the police to arrive.
Arrest of one Joseph Locke.
Chief, you can't do this, you can't.
I can do anything I want. As you see, this is signed by Her Majesty, Inspector of Taxis. Of
the audience's attention is turned back to Joe. Even a young man in naval uniform is transfixed. In the wings, Mickey remonstrates with Jim Abbott. Joe blows his audience a kiss and strides off stage, coming face to face with his old enemy. He extends his arms with clenched fists as if to say, "Take me."
Not yet, Frank. I think we'd all like to hear Mr. Locke do his last encore.
Joe gives a flicker of a smile. His eyes widen as he looks at Mickey, and he strides back on stage. Mickey mouths his gratitude to the policeman. On stage, Joe dons his characteristic black overcoat, black hat, and white scarf, nonchalantly slung over his shoulder. He grins across to Mickey.
I bet you never thought I was this big, eh, Mickey?
Can you do a 3-week booking in August?
As Joe begins his encore, a line of policemen file up on stage behind him.
Come on, Joe!
My heart is broken, but what care I? Such pride inside me has woken. I'll try my best not to cry, my boy, when the final farewells must be spoken. I joined the Legion, that's what I know. And in some far distant region, the human heart comes on come through. I shall start my life anew. Goodbye is time, I sought a foreign clime, where I may find their hearts more kind than I need behind. And so I go to fight a savage foe, although I know that I'll be sometimes missed by the girl I've kissed. In some Abyssinian French dominion I shall do my bit. I'll fall for the flag if I must. Where the desert sun is nice and handy, I'll be full of grit. You won't see my heel for the dust. I'll do what I, you'll know the reason why. When home, I'm boldly opposed, last stand for the fatherland. Goodbye, it's time, I sought a foreign clime, where I may find them hearts more kind than I leave behind. And so I go to fight a savage foe. Oh, I know that I'll be sometimes missed by the girls I've kissed. In some Abyssinian French dominion I shall do my bit. I'll fall for the flag if I must. Where the desert sand is nice and handy, I'll be full of grit. You won't.
One of the policemen starts clapping. An older colleague gives him a reproving glance.
Boldly upon last goodbye, goodbye. I wish you all a last goodbye.
Joe takes off his hat and waves it at the crowd. The audience wave their handkerchiefs back at him. Joe stands with arms outstretched. Making her way through the cheering throng, a woman carrying a single red rose. She pushes her way to the front of the stage and, smiling, hands the rose to Joe. She takes his hand and pulls him off the stage into the crowd. Jim Abbott watches dismayed as Joe is engulfed. Out of the ceiling, amid a mighty crash and falling masonry, a huge white demolition ball is being lowered from the ceiling by a heavy metal chain. It lands in the center of the crowd, who push Joe towards it. Joe climbs onto the ball and signals to Benny Rose. Slowly, in time with the music, he is hoisted up out of the sea of people and high above them. Policemen look up helplessly. Outside the theater, the red crane is pulling up the chain. In the cab at the controls is none other than a smiling Frank with a C, Sinatra. Joe waves to the people on the balcony as his sails slowly past them. Jim Abbott, hat knocked off his head, pushes his way through the cheering crowd. Benny Rose is laughing ecstatically. Jim Abbott looks up at the pair of feet sitting astride the huge ball. He's seething. Mickey drags Kathleen and Nancy out of their box by the hand. Joe's boys are laughing uncontrollably. Outside, policemen drag Frank Sinatra from the cab. Jim Abbott takes hold of the controls. Mickey, Kathleen and Nancy dash up the back stairs to the roof. The roof door is locked, but Mickey finds the key in a box. Derek and Gordon are with them as they run out onto the roof. Below, a policeman is questioning Frank.
Name? Frank Sinatra.
Chief Constable Jim Abbott at the controls grits his teeth in a horrible grin, hardly able to contain his excitement. On the roof, Mickey, Nancy and Kathleen are watching anxiously. Unseen, Joe appears behind them. He embraces Kathleen. As the last few links of the chain emerge from the hole, Jim Abbott lets out a roar of triumph. Amid a flurry of white doves, in black hat, black coat and white scarf, it's Mr. X. As Mr. X is lifted high up into the sky, Joe salutes him and Mickey roars with delight. To Joseph Locke, may the wind be always at your back. Joseph Locke is now living in County Kildare, Ireland.